Welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I'm Mona, and I was married for 30 years, in that relationship for 32, and we didn't find out we were a neurodiverse couple until our 29th year of marriage. And I've been divorced since 2018, and together we have an amazing adult daughter who's thriving and doing fantastic. And I am so excited about today's conversation because I know it is going to be helpful to so many neurodiverse couples out there. And today's guest on the Neurodiverse Love Podcast is Orion Kelly. And some of you may know him from his YouTube channel called That Autistic Guy. And I just bought Orion's book and I highly recommend it. I've only read two chapters so far, but it's called Autism Feels, An Earthling's Guide, and it's amazing. So Orion, welcome to the podcast. I'm so glad you said yes.
Some people, everyone's heard of me, for goodness sakes. I'm the hottest autistic content creator on the planet. Thank you for having me. I mean, I'm more doing you a favor than the other way around, but that's fine.
I love your sense of humor. I love the bluntness of this conversation already. I love it. I love it. I love it. So I'll probably laugh a lot, Orion. So I hope you're okay with that. So one of the things that I always love to have my guests share is kind of how they got where they are. So yes, your YouTube channel is blowing up. And I think after this, it's going to even blow up more because there's a lot of folks I have listeners from 74 countries. I'm sure you have more. But I would love to know when you discovered you were autistic and how that happened. And then what made you decide to start a YouTube channel and put yourself out there?
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear you only have fans on this planet, but you'll get there eventually. Don't worry. My autism journey began at birth, but like many adults that I like to refer to it as a lost generation. It seems to resonate with a lot of people who grew up autistic because you can only be born autistic. You can't catch it or acquire it. So
right.
they basically weren't the presentation that was going to be picked up, be that. I mean, some of the people that talk to me are in their 60s and 70s. So, you know, so let's say the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, even the 90s, that, you know, that kind of half a century, was clearly, you know, very far behind the medical knowledge we have now. So it's the same premise of saying that Mount Everest wasn't there until it was discovered. I mean, it mm-hmm. was always there. So were the lost generation. The medical profession just hadn't caught up. They were just looking for severely autistic young white boys. So clearly what's happening with the lost generation is we've grown up. Some have had kids. Their kids have been diagnosed. And that diagnosis and that even the assessment process where you're filling out a lot of forms on behalf of your child, you know, is a very much a kind of a, wow, that's me too kind of stuff. And you know, that's led to the diagnosis. So that is the story. This is one of the reasons why, you know, my content can resonate. It's because my story is all my fans' story, basically, because we've grown up undiagnosed, feeling broken and horrible and not fitting in. And our child has basically saved us by receiving a diagnosis. Now, our child wouldn't have got one either, probably, if they were born when we were born, because again, we're talking about, you know, this spectrum of autism that isn't just the one, you know, the one size fits all. So the journey for me was through my son's assessment and diagnosis and the support of my wife. I went on to seek one as well, and, you know, was diagnosed autistic as a dad with an autistic kid. And my background prior to diagnosis and prior to marriage and kids was radio. So basically radio, TV, media. So, which is not uncommon. There's many performers in radio and TV who are clearly on the spectrum, either diagnosed or not diagnosed. And that's the kind of creative flair that there's something about them that's very different. But of course they seem to struggle to work well with others or environments, and, you know, they're just labeled as bad. So, you know, that skill provided me with the opportunity to say, look, I should do a podcast. And the pod, because I was a radio guy. And you know, the podcast led to my doing a YouTube channel. And I think the purpose of that was, as a radio guy, podcasts is easy. But as a YouTuber, it's a complete rebirth, regeneration. And as humans, we seek that type of stuff. We don't, you know, you don't just want to do the one thing that's easy. You'd like to, you know, conquer new mountains. So, you know, that's why I chose to go to YouTube. And look, the fact of the matter is, number one, you can actually create a thriving career or a business as a content creator on YouTube. And the reach is really phenomenal and is actually a great way to connect with more people and let them feel like a community, where a podcast, you know, I have a podcast and people love it, but they listen to it and they love it. That's great. But I really love the idea of content creation that is multimedia, where you can actually physically connect with your community, you know, whether it's live streams or videos or different things. So, you know, that's effectively where my career and my skills converged with a diagnosis. And I often tell people it felt like a Nelson Mandela moment. Like I'm kind of annoyed. I'm frankly pretty angry that I kind of found my purpose in life later in life, you know, like in your kind of people don't think it's late, but you're like, you know, late mid to late 30s when you start to have these things happen. It's annoying to me. It's annoying to me. But in fact, it converged and I found my purpose. My purpose is I built my skills in radio and TV and performing. I built my skills in the proper commercial industry in Australia to the point where when I got a diagnosis, I was able to use them, but actually use them to serve others, use them for good, not use them just to sell an icy cold can of Coke or some crap like that. You know, so it actually made sense. Once you kind of find, and I feel this is the same for everyone, once you kind of find your element in life and your true, you know, the true reason why you're here, you know, that thing you have to serve others, that's when it all aligns in life. So you know, for me, really, the diagnosis with me and my son really put me on a track to, you know, to live the life I've always wanted to live, my, you know, the dream life, but also was purely based on making life better for my son. I didn't care about other people. The only reason why I did podcasts and YouTube videos was just to try and turn around the ability for my son to have a better life than me. And then as a byproduct, people started to relate to it. And now, of course, it's evolved. And it's, you know, it's still, I still think of my son when I'm doing it, how can I make his life better? But it evolves over time. And that's really my story. I've given up on the ability for me to have a good life and the world to appreciate or accept me, and focusing on kind of my son.
Thank you so much for that. And, you know, if everybody could live their purpose, oh my gosh, what a wonderful world we would have. I am altruistic. I'm a social worker. I've been a social worker throughout my entire career. But I have to tell you, Orion, I never in a million years thought I'd be a podcaster. And I've been doing it for about 3.5 years. I absolutely love it. So my social work skills helped me become a good interviewer and conversationalist with people I've never met and are on different sides of the world. And maybe one day I'll be able to talk to people on other planets. I'm just kidding.
The purpose thing annoys me, by the way. Like, can I just say, you may have to put a disclaimer at the start of this podcast. And if you can't do that in post-production, I'll do it now. And the disclaimer is this. I'm an autistic person. I've lived an entire half my life not knowing why I was bad or broken, and basically being rejected and ostracized and bullied and punished and pushed away. I'm not here to please you or make you feel happy. I'm here to be real, tell you the truth, and help people. So this may be the most offensive podcast you've ever listened to. I apologize if that's the case. I'm not sincere in that apology. I'm just saying it to make you feel better. But basically, if this is, you know, if I'm annoying to you, if you hate me, if you don't like me, I guess what I'm trying to say is, no dirt. Welcome to my life. Do you think that matters to me? Like, so right. I'm not trying to offend anyone, but I'm me, I'm real. And why, Ryan, why are you like this? Because the world has told me to get stuffed. for half my life. So I've gone ahead and got stuffed. So this is the thing, right? This idea that it's like a fanciful thing to find your purpose. No. Your idea of your purpose is fanciful. You know, your purpose isn't to walk the Golden Globe red carpet, right? So the bottom line is your purpose is, what is your gift? Everyone has something. So yours might be connecting with people, right? Emotionally or whatever, right? This is the point. Okay. So your purpose is not like fanciful. It's, what's your gift? What are you good at? And here's the fact of life. And if everyone wants to know, well, what's the secret to life? This is a secret to life. And it's, I think, frankly, I think it's a Picasso quote, but the bottom line is, you know, it's in effect, find your skill and give it away. That's the key to life, guys. It's not rocket science and it's not fanciful. This idea that, how do I find my purpose? You already know your purpose. It's because you know that you know what you're good at. That's your purpose. And then now what you got to do is serve others by giving them that, right? Now what happens when you find something and you give it away, things come back to you. Now that could be anything. It could be love or friendship, and that also can be income and money and opportunities. So this is not rocket science. If you're an elephant and you're looking around and you realize you're living in a tree, you're not living in your purpose. You're not in your element. That's your fault. No. You moron. Get out of the tree. You're an elephant. It's going to break, dopey, right? So yeah, I hate when people talk about this purpose thing as like a fanciful thing. So that's bullcrap. You know, it just agitates me. Anyway, you've lost your entire audience in 14 minutes.
No, I didn't. Because what's going to happen, Orion, and I know this, there are going to be so many people who are going to be laughing. There are going to be people who are going to be clutching their hearts saying, oh my gosh, Orion sounds like my husband, my father, my partner, whatever. And so I love that you are real. And that's what I am throughout the podcast. And believe me, I've lost some family members because I am real and I am transparent. You know, we all go through shit. That's life. We all go through shit. And whether or not we come out the other side, you know, healthier, growing, learning, being a better person is really up to us. It's our choice. So, right. And I created Neurodiverse Love because I was married for 30 years to a man I loved and I still care about him. And I didn't want a divorce, but I knew we couldn't heal together. And so I know you and Renee have been married, I think you told me, since 2012, right? You and your wife.
Yeah. And you've been together since, I think, 2008 or something. So.
Okay. So you've been together for a really long time. And I know my listeners are going to want to know, how did you do it? How do you make it work? And when we were prepping for the podcast, one of the things that you said to me is you talked about your self-loathing and your own hatred and how you didn't necessarily feel that you were the best husband. And so, you know, this is something that I hear in a lot of the support groups that I run. I facilitate support groups for couples. And I don't think a lot of us who are not autistic understand what our partners are feeling. So do you want to talk a little bit about kind of what that looks like in your relationship?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think, but yeah, so there's obviously like a couple of things there, like an answer to your question about how did you make the marriage thing. So you pay a guy, he reads some words, you sign a certificate and you're married. I mean, it's not rocket science. But yeah, so, and the other thing too is, guys, and I'm, you know, you guys might find this funny, and I like to make people laugh, right? I've always made people laugh my whole life, but, and that's cool. But for God's sakes, don't think I'm just doing this to make you laugh. It's true. It's truth. Mm-hmm. It's laughter, but it's truth. I'm giving you a bit of sugar on your medicine. The bottom line is here. And you know, this is the problem of being me. I want to say things to you that I really believe, and then my brain takes me somewhere, and then by the time I'm back, I don't know what I was trying to say, and that's just happened. But with the, I just wanted to say I'm going to get onto the Renee thing, but I just want to say, it's astounding to me, and frankly, it's perplexing past the point of it almost impacts my mental health that people think it's a compliment if someone is honest or tells the truth or is upfront. Like, what do you mean? What are you saying? Are you saying that your standard operating system, you know, is to be deceiving? Like, it's bizarre to me that it's like, you want to give me credit for telling, I get credit for telling the truth and being real and honest, and my audience will love that. Well, what are your audience, a bunch of thieves? What are they doing? What are they, the fraudsters? Seriously. It's funny to me. It's funny to me that people, anyway, we'll move on. This is just part of an autistic, you know, mind, the way my mind, my mind works. So the bottom line is, you know, dating and relationships can be very hard for neurodivergent people, right? And that's just the way it is. And it's very basic to explain it. It's because, you know, diversity is if you buy like a share portfolio, if you have shares or, you know, stock in two different companies, that's a diverse portfolio. Same with, you know, if you're a farmer and you have, like, you know, I don't know, cows and corn, right? That's diversity in agriculture. So you can't get, you know, you can't get two of the same brains and put them together and say this is a neurodiverse couple. If you've got an autistic person and you've got a neurotypical person, that's a neurodiverse couple. So that's diversity. That isn't the same thing. That isn't, they're not both corn. They're not both stocks in one company. So, you know, already this is troublesome for both parties, because my assumption is, from my experience, and I can only go by my experience, the only reason why you would initially ever date someone is because you both have an attraction, right? There's nothing, it's purely superficial. Basically, you're just both attracted to each other and you think we should get together and date or whatever. And then there's a connection, there isn't, and it goes on or it doesn't, right? That's in effect. So there's that, which really has no bearing on neurodiversity. I don't believe there's any neurodiversity in physical attraction or connection. But then when you start to connect, so for example, dating, before I met Renee, you know, it would never go well, because the way I communicated, and people might be listening to this right now going, yep, I can see that, that, you know, these chicks were walking out of me. I mean, it was too much. I mean, I was the kind of person where I liked to talk about marriage, kids, and long-term goals in the first 20 minutes of the first date, while waiting for the mains to come up. Like, because it made no sense for me to talk about irrelevant crap.
Small talk, right.
Because that doesn't occur to me. So for me, it was important to talk about real legitimate stuff. And also, you know, that made me very fussy. Like, so... In a non-superficial way, I wasn't just gonna, and I also couldn't play the game. So this is the other thing. Through my dating years, so I'm autistic, so you've got to put it back 5 to 10 years. So pretty much in my kind of, you know, mid-20s is when my dating years pretty much started. Because you've easily got to add 5 years to an autistic person for emotional intelligence and kind of when they do things. A good way of looking at it is, you know, I had kids in my mid-30s. Married. So like everything happens later. Thank God. But you know, in that initial phase, I never asked anyone out. In fact, I can tell you right now, I don't believe, in my honest recollection, I've ever asked anyone out. Now, I'm a guy. Yes. The question is, well, how did you date? And the answer to that is, well, the answer to that is, have you looked at me? I don't need to ask girls out. Have you looked at my videos? Hello? Hello, moron. I'm here. Can you hear me?
So they were all swarming into your life and asking you out.
So number one, you're talking about look at my face. Number two, you're talking about listen to my personality. Number three, you're talking about I'm a radio celebrity. Hello.
But the
truth is, I honestly never knew how to do it. Now, I remember early on in dating, you know, like a couple of particular girls. I'm probably only dated three girls. Something who actually kept coming up to me and saying, like, I'm gonna go home now. I want to leave now. I mean, like, can you talk to me, or can I basically doing everything. So I think, you know, you find your person. Everyone finds their person, and you know. In a way where it's like all the moons align, right? which makes no sense because we only have one. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. Let's say we're Saturn. They've got plenty. We may be able to live on. Right. There's a bit of maybe some water under the surface there. And you know, Saturn is a hero. If Saturn didn't shield some of the stuff early on, we would have been toast. So thank you, Saturn, for shielding the planets, Saturn. the gas giants that came in and went back out. Saturn protected us from the gas giants, and therefore we're still alive. Thank you, Saturn. moving on. I've completely forgotten what I'm talking about. No, it's the relationship thing, I think. So the point is, you know, for an autistic person to find a person who they connect with and who accepts them is very hard. Now, I understand that's hard for everyone, but of course, then the argument is, well, then shouldn't autistic people just date autistic people? Now, of course, the answer to that is, well, that's the same argument as shouldn't everyone just date, you know, their own, which is just bloody ridiculous. Makes no sense.
I agree. I agree.
So the idea that, so that's a fanciful idea and it makes no sense. But also, The other thing is you have to find, so my Renee, someone who won't actually run or be fearful or take things the wrong way. Now, of course, I still annoy and maybe, you know, agitate or upset Renee regularly, but not purposely. But see, she understands, she gets me in a way where other people don't get me. So this is the hardest thing to achieve for autistic people, so, you know, whether they're autistic women or autistic men. I mean, I've interviewed a lot of autistic, late diagnosed autistic women on my channel, and it's like talking to yourself. Their story is no different. So it's, you know, it's really hard. So for me, really, honestly and truly, from the first phone call, from the first date, it felt different. I could feel like an acceptance or a connection, something that you didn't have. Because I've just told you my experience in the past where they literally get offended or whatever, or walk out, right? So it was a very different experience. And as a result of that, it never ended. It's like our first date never ended, right? We had our conversations and first date, and it just never ended. It just snowballed until next thing you know, we're together and we're, you know, we didn't get married for like 4 years, but It didn't. I think the gap's there because when you have that much connection and that much confidence and just love in a relationship, you know, it doesn't actually matter. It's like you don't have to rush to get the ring on them or something. It's like, well, we'll always be together. So you know what I mean? It was just a different kind of connection. So I think for us, what's made it work is far more simple than people want the answer to be. And that is, in effect, you know, you find someone who actually understands you and can accept you and connects with you in a way where others don't. And the only way to find that is to go through those experiences. I can't replicate that or teach that. That's just, she gets me and understands. And also she can find that amusing or entertaining or refreshing or interesting rather than offensive. And so I think that's really the core key to us, you know, finding each other and getting together. But to say that it's easy or I don't fail every day is wrong. And you pointed to those feelings. As autistic people, we live our life feeling, you know, just a strong sense of self-loathing and self-hatred and lack of worth. And yet you have to think about it. And my son's the same. If from, you know, your first day of school till the day you die, you're in effect pushed away or ostracized or, you know, told you're different. And the only way you can really get our acceptance is to act normal like us, but then you'll still fail because that's actually not possible. You can't tell a PC to be a Mac, right? Not possible. You know, that's just a reality. It's a neurological reality. But of course, it's a horrific reality. there's young autistic kids right now who are already feeling self-loathing and hate to the levels that no one will ever understand because people know they're different and won't accept them and refuse to allow them to be anything but normal. And that's not possible. So even when you find people, you know, like you find, you know, your Renee, you still have standard days where it's not all, nothing's perfect. And as a result of that, my constant feeling and reactions is this just this sense of this is, you know, you should find a real husband. You should get a real you know, a real guy, a real husband, someone who can actually, you know, do the things the way they're supposed to be done or something. And that might seem like a ridiculous comment to her, but to me, it's a very realistic daily thought. It makes sense to me because I know I'm not a real person. I'm an autistic person, and that's not on this planet. That's not real. That's wrong. And I know I can't become the PC that, you know, yes. And by the way, to be clear, yes, neurotypical people are crappy little PCs, and autistic people are the max. So get stuffed. I point to the creator, by the way. So, you know, who was genius but struggled to work with others and couldn't play well in teams.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. So the bottom line is, you know, the that's a real feeling. Now, presumably if you're a neurotypical person, as in a non-autistic person, these are the kind of things that would help you have more appreciation for your partner in those times where, like I do with Renee, they just really piss you off or let you down or say the wrong things. I can promise you it's not malicious or intentional. It's a different brain. And that's where that comes from, that kind of self-loathing, self-hatred, but also, you know, the virtual daily thought and remark that, you know, you should get a real husband kind of thing.
Do you actually say that, Orion?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You do?
Oh, yeah, okay, absolutely.
The reason I ask that is because my ex-husband used to say to me all the time, I will never be enough for you. I can never meet your expectations. And I couldn't understand where that came from. But now I understand because, you know, there were so many wonderful things about him, and I would give him compliments and I would tell him how much I love him, why I fell in love with him, why I was with him. And it, just like you said, he couldn't accept the compliments. It was like he didn't see that side of him, and he didn't value the way I was seeing him. And now, you know, I mean, when you were talking, it actually makes me tear up. It made me tear up because he's a wonderful man. And Orion, you know, if Renee was on here, I'm sure she could list 100 things that are wonderful about you.
Well, it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter because they're words. Right. And I actually know that the point you can prove your own self wrong, knowing that you agree that words don't matter. It's actions. That's how life works. So the idea that neurotypical people want to say, but I gave you words. Yes, but you're also the people that made the rule that words don't matter. It's actions. You can say I love you, but if you're going to stab me, that's telling me you're not, right? So there's the neurotypical made the rules. Actual neurotypical made rules that actions matter more than words. Yet then say, but why don't you believe me? I've given you words. Well, there's your answer, mate. So you know, if you're a neurotypical partner and you're saying, oh, but I told him I loved him, I'll say to you, yes, but did you have sex with me regularly? Because that tells me you love me. You know, did you do physical things, actions to support me or help me? That tells me you love me, right? So, and that's just my personal experience. I'm just being honest. You made the rules, guys, and you said words don't matter. So don't tell me you gave me words, because that's just, autistic people hate when you give us rules, right? They're black and white rules, and then you think you can bend them and that's normal, but then we're never given those unwritten rules to the game. We're trying to play a game that we're not a part of, right? You give us the rules to try and play it, but then you have these unwritten rules that contradict the rules, and then you get angry at us when we don't understand that. You know, so this is what I mean, right? Like, I don't care about Renee's list. I care about the way we function actively as a couple. That's way more important. And that's, you know, this is what, this is where obviously this is a very different conversation, right? Because, you know, you can't expect me to come on and just agree with everything you say, because we're in effect.
I don't want you to.
We're both sides of the argument here. You and I are both sides of the argument. But the thing is, you know, when your husband was saying those things that he was saying, you have to understand that it isn't like a needy thing. You know, that's the thing, right? It's actually, people think you're just trying to be a victim or be needy or whatever. They don't want you to say, you know, shower you with words or stuff. It's come from, you know, your partner, think about them as a child. They're hearing the same, they're feeling and hearing the same stuff. They just don't believe you. they don't, it's got to the point where we don't even hear the words. Why would we believe you when our whole life we've been told, no, you're not right, you're not normal, this is not how, I'm sorry, but you make me uncomfortable, and you don't, you can't act like this, you have to act like how we act. Now we've got a brain that won't allow us, and we're actually told, I'm sorry, but you're making the other kids uncomfortable, right? It's like, it makes no sense. But that's actually the reality. So that just progresses and snowballs, which makes it even harder as an adult in a relationship to believe intentions or words, which obviously is troublesome for relationships. But, you know, I think it's really important to understand in this aspect here, we're talking about relationships, and, you know, it's like not all about one person, both have needs. We're talking about you have willingly and knowingly, I use a lot of legal words, I studied law obviously, but you have willingly and knowingly entered into a relationship with a person who has a medically diagnosed neurodevelopmental disability. I don't care for your crappy arguments, mums and dads, about it's not a disability, get stuffed. This is a medically diagnosed neurodevelopmental disability. You've entered into a relationship with a disabled person. If you expect them to be at your level or to, you know, to give, I disagree that it was wrong to say your husband wasn't meeting your expectations. I guarantee he wasn't, because your expectations weren't set subconsciously or consciously, you know, at a disabled level. They weren't. Because you didn't know or whatever.
We didn't know until our 29th year of marriage.
And that's the thing, right? But did you see the difference? Like people sometimes gloss over that. I'm not disabled. Maybe I have a YouTube channel. That makes no sense. That's not how it works. It's not an intellectual disability. It's a neurodevelopmental disability. It affects, you know, social communications and interactions and the things that are really important in relationships. So, and, you know, the emotional intelligence and the signs and the signals. So, yeah, this is the kind of stuff that people really need to understand, in my opinion.
I agree with you 100%. And, you know, one of the things that I see over and over again is that there's so much unintentional hurt, pain, and trauma for both partners in neurodiverse relationships, and especially for those that are part of the lost generation. You know, they've been together for 10, 20, 30, 40 plus years, and they haven't understood each other's brains, and they haven't understood why they're so different. And they're both causing each other unintentional hurt. And I think, you know, one of the things that I like that you shared is that both you and Renee really worked to understand how you were different from each other. You know, that one of you was a PC and one of you was a Mac, and that you were never going to be the other type of operating system, computer, whatever. You're not going to have the same hardware, but you loved each other and you were looking to learn about each other. I think that's why I stayed married for 30 years, because I was always looking to learn. But at some point, I think for a lot of couples, Orion, it gets so toxic that one or both of them might be, you know, feeling mentally or physically sick and not able to stay in the relationship. And I think, you know, we have to do a better job as a society, whether it's on this planet or the entire galaxy. We have to do a better job, because too many people are struggling. And hopefully for your son and the generation that's coming up, especially since they have so much access to social media, they can start feeling more comfortable in their own skin and with who they are. And they will find their tribe. I see this with my daughter's friends. They're finding their tribe and their people, and they're not feeling so different because they have people who are neurodivergent in their life who are very, very accepting. I think it's becoming a different world for the younger generation. But I know one of the things that a lot of couples are struggling with, Orion, is the emotional intimacy. And you touched on that for a second. You know, when your wife needs, you know, to hold your hand, or she needs a hug, or she needs to process her day. You know, I know in the book you talk about the ways in which you all have kind of worked through that, but I'm sure there's challenges, just like in any relationship. So how, as a husband, do you help Renee, get her emotional intimacy needs met in your relationship, not outside with friends or with family members, or if she's in a support group or has a therapist or whatever. I would love to hear kind of how that connection happens for the two of you, if it does.
Yeah. And that's an easy conversation for me. I don't see any issues about talking about how we navigate that. I know some people get a bit weird about it, but that's fine. I'm sorry again. I always apologize for myself, and I try not to say that, but I'm apologizing for myself again. My brain had to stop for a second. I'm not forgetting about the intimacy thing, but I just want to go back for 1 second because my brain can't get past this. Every time we say something, I feel like I've heard you in our conversations, and even in the last 40 minutes, multiple times, restate your circumstance and your relationship and why it ended and stuff. And you say it over and over, and my brain starts to think like, is she saying that because that's going to be everyone's reality, or that's, am I going to be stuck like that? I don't want that to be my reality. And then I'm not, again, I just an autistic brain. I'm not trying to offend you, but who are you trying to convince? Why do you keep saying the same comment? Who are you trying to convince? Are you trying to convince you that, or me, that it was that you know, it went on for so long and you love it, but it was toxic and you had to end? Like, I don't know. It just troubles me. I feel like when people say something more than once, I start to not believe them. I'm not saying you're a liar, but, and I'm not trying to offend you. I swear to God, I'm not trying to offend you.
But when someone says
something more than once, I smell a rat. It's like, who are you trying to convince, mate? I don't get it. And it sounds like excuses or convincing, and I know it's not. Uh-huh. And no one should be in a toxic relationship. I guarantee you. But okay. what if that's up? You know, like, you're basically saying the longer a neurodiverse relationship goes, the more toxic it gets, and then it ends. That's basically what I'm learning from it, and that's my brain thinks.
Yeah.
And it's stressing me out. It's stressing me out.
Okay. So let me. I thank you so much for sharing that. The reason that I have said that is I did not want to divorce Orion, and we didn't divorce because we were a neurodiverse couple. That's not why we divorced. We divorced because our communication had gotten really, really challenging, because we weren't hearing each other, because we weren't repairing after conflict, because during therapy, the therapists were asking my ex to do things that he was not willing to do, and I was willing to do the work. I'm not saying I was perfect. I was a screamer. I was, I'm sure, at times extremely challenging as a wife and a partner. But he once, maybe more than once, I should say, said to me, I'm no longer willing to do the work in our marriage. He said that to me, and we move forward on the divorce for that reason and a lot of other reasons. So what I hear oftentimes from couples, whether it's the autistic partner or the not autistic partner, is one of them is not willing to do the work anymore that it takes to be in a relationship with a romantic partner. And what I hear from you, Orion, is that you're doing the work every day, you know, even if you're trying something and it's not working the way your wife maybe wants it to work. She understands that your brains are wired differently. And I think, I don't know if that helps at all, but I think that's one of the biggest challenges when one partner doesn't want to do any more work. And that's what happened. That's why we are divorced. Yeah. It wasn't a lack of love. Yeah.
Fair enough. I mean, I guess that makes more sense. It's almost like me trying to like reverse engineer what happens so it doesn't happen for me. But I think by the same token, the work, it's a very generic thing. Like, you know, well, I don't want to do the work because I don't know what the work is, like the specific work. Right. But that's the thing too, right? So let's say, okay, so I'm going on to your question now, because this is a great segue. I see a psychologist, you might call him a therapist, but you know, I see a clinical psychologist in Australia monthly, right? I would never do it with my wife. That's bullcrap, right? Two different brains, that makes absolutely no sense. And there's and there's no way of growing as a couple. So I will take my challenges to my clinical psychologist. We will talk them through. She will, and a lot of them are in the book. She will provide me with strategies and ways to resolve things and tackle things and go about things that is to the benefit of Renee and me. And Renee does the same stuff. But this, like sitting on a couch holding hands, like get stuffed. That's not going to, that it makes no sense. So that's a key for me, being able to openly, honestly talk with someone regularly about the challenges and how we can navigate them and go forward and these different types of communication things. And it's also good because, you know, you don't, it's not like you or the clinical psychologist can't be, you know, truthful or open or judgmental towards the other person, right? Because sometimes that needs to be said. It just, you know, it's hard in a group setting. So that might be something that people are doing at the moment and wondering why. And I would suggest that, you know, given that they're different brains, you should be seeing different people and using that as an opportunity to work for each other. To me, that's the work I would do that makes sense for me and my brain. And it really is true when I talk about the book. Like so many of my best ideas have come from talking about my challenges in the relationship with my psychologist and talking through just me and her how we can navigate these, how we can, and these are same with my son, the challenges I have with schools and my son. And it's the, you know, this is the best time for me, the best, most valuable time where you really learn stuff and you take it back. And, you know, look, one of the best things that I ever learned, and this, I don't know if this would happen. I don't think this would happen in a group, like a couples setting. And again, okay, two different brains. I completely disagree with couples therapy for two different brains. But the best thing probably was, it didn't occur to me, but I was told that neurotypical people, or my wife, when she tells me things that incorporate problems or bad experiences or things that have gone wrong, she doesn't actually want me to talk or fix them. She just wants me to listen, and then I'm done. Now, the autistic brain, being logical, not emotional, much stronger logical part of the brain, hears problems or run-ins or confrontations or issues, and number one, gets very defensive on behalf of the person they love, and number two, seeks to fix them. Now, that means the brain starts, and when the brain starts, it never stops. So now I'm peppering her and interrupting her with follow-up questions and solutions, and she starts to say, why are you interrupting me? Why are you telling me what I did wrong? How you think it's going to help me by telling me the things I did wrong and how I can fix them? That doesn't help me. Now, to me, that sounds ridiculous. If someone comes to you with a problem and you can fix it or help them, then you would do that. Now, this is a great example of the autistic brain. Now, my psychologist told me, Orion, you have to understand, most of the times your wife just wants to be heard. She doesn't want you to defend or react or provide any help. She just wants you to listen. Now, that's still, frankly, to me, that still doesn't make a lot of sense in my brain. It seems odd to me. It doesn't make, it just doesn't compute. And that's a valuable lesson. Now, of course, what we did, what I did in the work I did with just my psychologist, I took back to Renee that from now on, Renee, when we're on the couch at night and the kids are finally asleep, and we have a small amount of time before we have to go to bed, if you're about to do one of those stories from today where it's a situation that I would think is something I should fix, or a problem or an issue, I need you to start by saying, Orion, I'm going to share a story from work today. I just want to vent. I just want you to listen. I don't want you to fix it. I just want to share this with you. And then I know, shut up and listen. And she'll also say, you know, Orion, can I share a problem I've got at work at the moment and get your take on it, ask you for some help? So I know either way. So I know I'm either listening to the point of trying to solve it, or frankly, I'm telling my brain to turn off. Like it's like, you know, Madagascar, smile and wave, boys, smile and wave. I'm not ignoring her. I'm listening. Right. I'm not ignoring her. I'm listening, but I'm not listening to the point where I'm allowing my brain to go out of control with the things. And this is a really important distinction, because as part of emotional intimacy, you need to feel heard and supported by your partner. Now, I can tell you, and I'm someone who does the work, I can tell you on a daily basis, she tells me, I feel like you never support me because of the way I respond to her talking. So the way so she'll come up with problems, and what she realizes, she knows this, but she says, I know that's where you're coming from, but my brain, just like your brain, my brain doesn't have another response to this kind of, mm-hmm. like when you talk back to me like this, my brain only feels like I'm not being supported, right? When I'm, right. and I am, and the issue is I can get so so angry and upset because autistic people have like this really strong sense of justice, this really strong sense of right and wrong. And mm-hmm. we hate bullies and that kind of stuff. And I get so angry for how these people would treat her, say at work or whatever, that I can't let it go. And then I start to, you know, I start to express that. And unfortunately, and I still can't navigate through this, right? I'm still working out. But unfortunately, in her mind, it comes across like I don't support her. Now, for me, I'm showing her support. I'm telling, and I'll explain, well, I'm showing you support by telling you, by getting angry for you and giving you all these things like, well, you should, you know, and unfortunately it can manifest in different ways. For me, it's I'm showing love and affection and support. To her, my love, affection, and support sounds like I'm controlling, I'm not supporting, and I think everything she does is wrong. Now, this is between two people that actually understand each other. And the real point here is if you both have different brains, you aren't able to learn, honestly, you aren't able to learn how to have the other brain's experience or reaction, even just because you know you have an autistic partner doesn't mean you can tell yourself to have an autistic experience or reaction to what they say to you. Your brain doesn't allow that. It's utterly ridiculous. It's the same reason why planes still crash. Like pilots still crash. Planes still go down. Pilots still make mistakes. How, Orion? I mean, I've watched every episode of Plane Crash Investigation. I've read all the reports. They should know by now. How stupid are these people? They're not stupid. That's the brain. The brain can practice this. See, I have a big bugbear at this whole idea of like you can learn things and practice things and you can fix it. That's crap. If that's the case, then why do, like, if you're watching the NFL, why did the quarterbacks still get sacked? Or why do these morons that are trying to catch the ball? God knows, I'm from Australia. We catch balls, mate. What are these morons trying to catch the ball, dropping the ball every 10 seconds? They got gloves on. It's illegal to wear gloves in Australian sport. You're wearing gloves to catch balls and you can't catch them? What is wrong with you? Do you practice? Yes, we practice 6 days a week. You practice 6 days a week and you're still dropping balls? My point. That's my point. Yeah. You can practice to be supportive or not feel like I'm not being supportive, but it doesn't matter because it's in we don't live in the past. We don't live in practice. We live in the moment. And right. and the moment is stressful. And this is the issue. You don't, you know, this is one of the reasons why they don't teach pilots to avoid that. Actually, you know, they don't teach pilots like to look out for trees. Because when they did a study in simulators, they realized that when that happens, the pilots are more often than not hit the trees. So the goal is to focus not on the trees. The goal is to focus on the gaps. So all they say is that they don't say here's a simulator. Don't hit the trees. Avoid the trees. Because when they do that, they hit the trees. They say, here's a simulator. Find the gaps. Go the gaps. Use the gaps. Fly through the gaps, and they don't even see the trees. The trees aren't there. The same trees in the same tree simulator, nothing's changed.
Right.
But all they're seeing is the gaps. Now, if all you're seeing is how you see it through your brain,
right?
Because that's the only way to focus. The only way to focus, you can't learn how to not do it. The only way to focus is to look for the gaps. The gaps are the other person's perspective. And I try to do the same. I try to do the same because in the end, it's not possible to be perfect here, but you're focusing on the wrong thing, which is you're making me feel not supported, right? and that doesn't help because that's all I was trying to do, right?
Yeah. And I think what you just said is so important. Look for the other person's perspective and look to see how you can understand it. Now, I would use the word validate. And you may not like that word because a lot of us want to feel validated. But I think the way you said it is really helpful because I now understand the autistic partners. I mean, you know, every man that I've pretty much dated since my separation is autistic or autistic ADHD. So they've taught me so much because I wanted to better understand my ex-husband. I just didn't know why we were so different and why we process things so differently. But I have tremendous, tremendous patience, which I didn't have in my marriage, Orion. I have a curiosity, which I didn't necessarily have in my marriage. So I think folks hearing that they really need to look at how they can understand their partner's perspective, even when it's driving them up the friggin' wall, because that's going to be the case for both partners, right? You know, because they're processing things through their own brain. Taking a moment and pausing and saying, okay, I really want to understand where you're coming from. I'm just not getting it. Because I can tell you, you know, there are a lot of fights that are going on all over the world because neither partner wants to understand the other partner's perspective.
Not just partners, nations, countries. this is humanity.
I know. I agree
with you. This is humanity, yeah. And this is the core issue. That is the core issue, really.
Yeah, I agree with you. And what's so interesting is I remember when my daughter was young, my daughter and my husband, when she was growing up, they were like two peas in a pod. They understood each other. I actually used to ask her to translate for me because I didn't understand her father. And she could. She understood us both. She was a great translator. But I know that I had so much empathy for her struggles. I had so much more love and understanding for her because she was a child. And, you know, I coached her, whatever I did to help her be more comfortable in situations where she wasn't comfortable or, you know, listen to her with a different way of being there, you know, and validating what she was feeling rather than wanting to change it. But Orion, you know, a lot of us in our most intimate relationships don't treat our partners with the same compassion and grace and give them the space and time that we would give to our child. So I think, and that's another message for folks, you know, sometimes we need to ask ourselves, how can we be more kind to our partner, whether we're autistic or not autistic? Well,
yeah. Even just ask a question like, would you do this, what you're proposing to do to your partner, which might be, you know, like leave them or whatever, would you do that to your child?
Right.
Because it makes no sense to me. Like, so like you can leave your autistic partner, but you wouldn't desert your autistic grown kid. I think my brain's kind of spinning at the moment here. I don't think I'm able to get words out at the moment. It's okay. This is a really great conversation that makes a lot of sense to me. And I think I really find the whole premise of neurodiverse relationships overwhelming. And I'll also, you know, preface that by saying I don't know if I'd be able to have a relationship with another autistic person because I don't, in a way, I don't understand how that would work. The differences in brains can actually be really supportive. Where I think the other thing would be quite triggering. It's really interesting.
That's so interesting.
I think that would just trigger me badly. It's an interesting question. But I just think that, you know, navigating all these issues is really tricky. But I think that clearly what my wife, as opposed to other, you know, dates in the past, weren't able to do. My wife was able to embrace a type of level of honesty that I will have. So take away the signals and the signs and the, right. They're not easy for me to read. So, you know, make things more basic because in the end, you know, you don't want to make it harder on each other by trying to maintain the kind of way you would be in a different relationship. So, you know, so for example, you know, there with the emotional kind of intimacy stuff, we have to be really honest and upfront with each other. And like I said, signpost things. I'm going to tell you a story. I don't want your help. I just want you to listen. I'm just venting, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's the same stuff with the physical intimacy stuff. I don't know how, you know, this works in general, because, you know, I don't live in anyone else's life. But, you know, like from our point of view, as an autistic person, I don't know how sexuality is very different for autistic people. And it's hard to, you know, people think we're sexless, emotionless robots, right? So that's obviously not
true. I do not.
Yeah, yeah. And other people, you know, there are a lot of autistic people who are asexual or who, you know, have no interest. And that's cool. But from my point of view, it's very important to me. And I would say, if we're talking about love languages, you know, my wife might, her love language might very much be, you know, affectionate hugs and I guess what, supportive words and things like that. Mm-hmm. And my love language, you know, when I feel most connected to her is like, you know, when we're having sex. I don't know how, what I'm supposed to say on an American podcast.
Yeah, but, presumably you can that's say okay. Whatever you want, whatever you want.
So I legitimately feel most peaceful and connected and loving in those situations, I know it's a paradox, because obviously hugging and holding hands, you know, what's the real difference? I mean, there's skin contact. I like skin contact, but then I wouldn't like it in other situations, you know, like if one of my kids or, you know, my wife, like their foot touched my leg while I was sleeping, I'd probably swat it off like it was a deadly spider. And, you know, there's 1,000 of those in our house, trust me. So, you know, it's a paradox. But people have to understand there are autistic paradoxes. Autistic people might get angry at people for eating loudly or sipping loudly and have to leave the room. Happens to me. But then my wife will go, yeah, but you're the loudest slurper in the whole bloody house, mate. And that's true. That's true.
But,
it's like,
but it
I'll go,
you
know,
you.
But it see, it's coming from me. Yeah.
Right.
So, but this is an autistic paradox. So, and it's the same, you know, the affection stuff. So we navigate that in a very honest and open way, in a very blank, you know, blunt, honest and open way. There are no signs or signals. So it's very clear. And usually what happens, you know, what happens is it's not something I have to try and read between the lines, right? So it's just obvious. And she's open and honest with her feelings, and I'm open and honest with my feelings, and you just do that. So it's a very different. You know how some relationships can be really conservative, and it's like it's so hard, and like, you know, it's got to be like a moment or a special event or something. It's like, I don't know, what are we doing here? It's like a premiere. It's what's happening. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. And you know, I think that honesty, that just being actually honest and open, mm-hmm. is probably the real key to all levels of intimacy. In a way, it's kind of swallowing your pride, really. Because, you know, sometimes you kind of want to feel like you're being romanced or wooed or something, right? But if you swallow mm-hmm. your pride, in the end, like from my point of view, in the end, we're talking about, you know, two people having sex. We're not talking about a movie here, right? Like it's just a nice
it's just a nice
yeah. physical intimacy kind of experience. Why does it have to be so complicated in all these, you know, just so yeah, I think that they can be the one of more of the troubling things. We know each other's wants and needs, and we balance it, right? So you know, I think that's what's probably the most important thing we've learned, is to just be really, you know, open and honest. But also it's important for my wife. She knows that it has to be, you know, it has to be in a way, because autistic people can be very we can be very sensitive and very, very I guess damaged by any kind of like rejection or criticism. So mm-hmm. You know, it's not about, you know, slapping people away or, you know, doing the kind of, you know, it's about, you know, you're just honest with them. You know, I just don't feel like it, or for this or for that, like it's as opposed to, you know, stuff that can seem offensive, like we're disgusting or it's our fault or something. So, you know, it's about understanding the differences in how people, you know, take things, because autistic people can be really bloody sensitive, and it's really hard to navigate. But it just becomes, it's a depersonalizing is the key, really. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, it makes sense. It's like, you know, I'll be the first person to say, you know, like I actually feel really, really exhausted, or I actually feel like crap, right? Like, I wouldn't even think about trying to get any stuff going here, right? But so, you know, that's real, as opposed to like the, you know, the classic sitcom joke, I've got a headache. Like, so yeah, I think, you know, it's really important to be, just be real and open and honest, and take away all the, you know, the facade stuff around it. That just, I just don't, who cares? Yeah. So stupid. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And Orion, again, I will tell you that a lot of my listeners are going to find this conversation so helpful, because, you know, I think we have both been very forthright. I'm going to use that word, not honest, forthright. And I think that talking to you about how you and Renee have worked through some of these things, even though we've only talked for an hour, is going to be helpful for a lot of folks. And I know in your book, you used a term, front loading conversations. And I wanted to share that with the audience, because that's what you're talking about. If all of us could learn how to front load our conversations so that we can tell our partners what we need from them at the beginning, we may have more connection than we have now. And to understand that we're not going to be having the same perspective, and it goes to both sides, that we have to give each other a little leeway. And then the other thing you said about depersonalizing everything, that was, oh my gosh, I took everything personal in my marriage. And, you know, thank God I've worked through that. And I don't do it hardly at all, because I know, you know, the people that I'm with are not going to think the way I think. They're not going to want the same things that I want, that we are going to have different wants and needs. And I think the more we can understand that about our partners, and not wanting them to be a clone of us, whether, again, we're autistic or not autistic, neurotypical, whatever we call ourselves, I think that makes for a healthier, oftentimes, and a happier relationship, whether it's a marriage or another kind of relationship. So this has been a phenomenal conversation. I absolutely appreciate everything that we've talked about. I would love if we could end on whatever note you want to end on. One thing maybe that you wished you had known, maybe when you were dating and all those women who, or the three or four women that you dated that, you know, only gave you one date. What is it that you wish the world had known about you, and maybe they wouldn't have received you the way that they received you? If you want to answer that, because yeah, I think there's an opportunity for learning here. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's an odd thing to try and answer, because I think it's basic core. It's, well, if I knew at that point that I was autistic, that would have helped. But then if I disclosed, how would have that affected my ability to have jobs or relationships? But I think at the core, it comes down to intentions. If, you know, the people that obviously couldn't get me, didn't connect with me, found me abrasive or different. And like I said, when people, because you're different, people find you different, and it's built into humanity to find differences uncomfortable. That's just the way we work. So if it was possible when I was going through these experiences for my differences to be seen in not even in a positive light, but in a reality, that would be great, rather than, you know, misconstrued or taken as abrasive or blunt or rude or, you know, out of context or inappropriate or whatever. I think that would have been really helpful. But you know what, I think, like, going forward, I think the big one is, if people could look at differences as anything but things that are bad, wrong, or uncomfortable, that'd be great. With regards mm-hmm. to the dating, I don't really care they went bad because it got me to where I needed to go, to the right person. Right. So I wouldn't go back and fix them. What I would say is if we can actually look at our partners or people that are different to us and look at them with a appreciation rather than a judgment, then mm-hmm. it can only help both parties. And I think clearly at the moment, there's still a neurological bias, regardless of how much you love the person, there's a bias towards your brain. And the difference is judged rather than appreciated or understood. And that's why, you know, one of the big things I try to do is to help people understand things more. And I believe that if you can understand something more, you can appreciate it more. And I think a lot of people think because they're aware of something, they understand it. And that's why I hate like these awareness campaigns. They're so stupid. They're like tick a box corporate crap. Because no one actually learns anything. They just know, they just know that's the thing, right? So, you know, understanding is key. It's, you know, you can be aware of conflicts going on in the world right now, but you might not understand why they're happening, right? So then awareness means nothing. It's completely useless.
I agree.
So it doesn't make any sense. So I think, you know, understanding, not just saying you're different and that makes me feel uncomfortable, understanding you're different and why are you different? And, oh, okay, that makes sense. I appreciate that. You know, that can help. And it works both ways. And in the end, I think sometimes you just have to be real and understand if you've gone into a neurodiverse relationship and, you know, let's say you're neurotypical, you know, in the end, if I said, put your hand up, if you're the one with a neurological disability and you're not putting your hand up, I mean, you know, it's like you are going to have to understand that, you know, you're going to have to walk up some stairs and push the other person. Like, you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
Because I think, unfortunately, we are held to, you know, neurotypical expectations, even subconsciously, and that's an issue. And that comes down to a lack of understanding, but also a lack of acceptance. And from my point of view, I can be very blunt in that. It's like, in the end, that's, you know, either you're prepared to accept this, you know, or you're not. But I'm not going to have it. I'm not going to take this crap anymore, right? Either you accept that I've got disability and you don't, and therefore, you know, you are going to have to do some pushing from time to time, and, you know, metaphorically, and then that's that. Okay, so then we're moving on. I don't want to hear this crap anymore. Like, it gets very frustrating, because it's all about one side, but it works both ways. But reality is reality. Like, you've entered into a relationship with someone who's different, so it comes down to just really embracing and understanding those differences, and I think that's the key.
Yeah. I agree with you. And I think, you know, when we understand the differences that we each have, then it's easier to accept what is. I mean, I did a podcast on inappropriate hope a few weeks ago. And I love that term because I think sometimes we hope our partner is going to change in ways that are never going to happen. And I use the analogy that if you were with a partner who was blind and you're standing on the beach and you're asking them if they see the beautiful orange and purple and blue colors of the sunset, and no matter how wide they open their eyes, they are never going to see the sunset or the colors that you are describing to them. And I think that's something that can be so helpful for both partners. We are never, ever, ever going to be able to have the same brain. It's just not going to happen.
And hope is a beggar. Hope is a beggar. You want to be belief. Hope, you know, hope walks through the fire, belief jumps over it because it knows it's fire.
I love that. I might quote you again on that. So
that's a Jim Carrey quote. That's not my quote. Jim Carrey quote.
Oh, I love Jim Carrey. Jim and I are actually born on the same day. My birthday's coming up. I'm going to be the big 6-0. It's hard to believe. But I love your YouTube channel, and I'm sure if folks are not following you now, they're going to go. So it's That Autistic Guy on YouTube. And tell me where else people can find you, and I will put all this in the show notes.
Yeah, I mean, even on YouTube, if you just put in Orion Kelly, just put in my name, Orion Kelly, like the constellation, it'll pop up. Orion Kelly on YouTube, and obviously I'm on all the social platforms. I've also got the website, which is a good place if you want to just find everything in like a one-stop shop. Just go to orionkelly.com.au, and that's pretty much where you'll get all the videos and podcasts and all the links and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, check out the YouTube channels. Say hey. You always reach out and say hey if you've listened and you wanted to say hello and how offended you were. I can't wait to hear you.
Yeah, you have over 600, close to 700 videos on your YouTube channel. You're amazing. I couldn't do it. I mean, I'm at almost 200 podcasts, and it's a lot. It's a lot. So I'm so glad that you're out there. I'm so glad that you're sharing, you know, all of this information with the world. And if you ever want to come back, Orion, and talk about anything else, or Renee would like to join you, I would love to have you back. It has been a really wonderful, engaging, interesting conversation. And I know it's going to be helpful to a lot of folks. Any last words that you want to share?
Not at all. Not at all. I'm done. I'm out. Have a great day. Enjoy. But it's been amazing. I appreciate you that your opportunity to talk to you about this. And I think it's a really important thing. And hopefully people have found it valuable.